So Tony, here's an actual patient in practice, 44-year-old man, jejunal mass that was found while he was being worked up for renal colic, had a 6-centimeter gist taken out, 7 mitoses per high Foward field. The patient's been on imatinib for 25 months with grade 1 diarrhea. The oncologist wants to know how long should the patient be treated. I mean, I guess you could say, suppose the patient were at 3 years or 4 years.
Yeah, so this is a very practical question. So this is a high-risk patient based on the size and the mitotic rate. And of course, if you want to follow the spirit of the study that was just discussed, then 3 years is optimal. The patient had about 2 years, 2 years plus 1 month. I think the more practical question is, should we continue beyond 3 years? And that's really the question. If you look at the study, actually, you look at the curves, at least with the recurrence-free survival, they continue on showing the separation beyond 3 and 5 years, actually, which does suggest that perhaps in patients like this, a younger patient who's tolerating the treatment well, there could be a justification to actually continue the treatment beyond 3 years.
So, Alan, how would you estimate this patient's untreated risk of recurrence? There are a lot of nomograms out there. I'm kind of curious, sort of eyeball, you know, what you would think this patient's original risk of recurrence was.
Well, that's a good question. It's a jejunal mass, 6 centimeters, and if really 7 mitoses per high power field, that's a very high mitotic rate for GIST. I would put this patient's risk of recurrence extremely high. I would guess 70-80%, would just throwing it out there. Somebody might throw another number out, but that's a very high risk of recurrence.
So I'm just kind of curious, Matt, what would be your bar in terms of risk? You know, oncologists are used to, we talked before in terms of colon cancer, certainly breast cancer. There's a lot of numeracy in adjuvant oncology nowadays. What kind of risk would it take for you to feel like you want to use imatinib? And is there a number that's even agreed upon right now?
Well, I'm not sure there's a number, and I think that's a tough question. Certainly a risk of 50% or higher, but...
That was actually, Charlie, what I think Chuck Blanke cited in his discussion last year, 50%. But realistically, does that mean if you put the patient into a nomogram and their risk was 20 or 25%, would you use imatinib?
You know, I think 50% for some people is pretty high, and that some might suggest that that's a threshold that may be too conservative in terms of use. Ultimately, I think this has to be driven by the clinical trials that we perform.
Again, Emily, practically speaking, I mean, do you actually go and calculate with a nomogram what you think the risk of recurrence is going to be and then decide whether to use imatinib?
Not so far, but I mean, I've been adherent to sort of the patients who are enrolled in these studies, but again, there are big disparities across studies in terms of the eligibility, and that's a major question here is, do all patients have the same benefit? But when you start dividing into subgroups, oftentimes you lose your power in terms of sample size. So there are a lot of subgroups within the group as a whole for which we simply don't have enough data to know if they benefit. You know, does a 4-centimeter tumor have the same benefit as a 10-centimeter? The mitotic rate, as we've discussed, may vary. But I think one critical issue that needs to be mentioned here in terms of this risk of recurrence is whether this is curative therapy. Because if it's not curative therapy and it simply delays recurrence, then it sort of may change the discussion entirely, because I think that really needs to be seen, because it could be that you understand there's a risk of recurrence, and at the time of recurrence, you institute imatinib, and you see the same overall outcome as if you were on continuous therapy. And I think that's what's unknown at this point in terms of duration of therapy.
And Bert, I've heard people talk about, I don't know if there are trials looking, you know, where you look at the time to imatinib resistance, that the concept, just as Emily said, that maybe in the long run, there was a rituximab study out there in lymphoma that looked at that, the RESORT trial. How do you, for practical purposes, Bert, go about deciding whether to use imatinib?
Well, first back to the nomograms. I do think it's important for someone in practice in particular to look at them, because there are things that are not easy to remember. For example, a 5-centimeter tumor in the jejunum is much different risk than a 7-centimeter tumor in the stomach. And if you don't see these a lot, if you don't look at the nomograms, you'll miss that. So, you know, you can have tumors up to 9-10 centimeters in the stomach that are actually very, very low risk and probably don't warrant treatment. So it is important to look and, you know, decide on some threshold that, you know, probably should be at least 20-25% or more before you start to treat. The duration question's a hard one. I think that there are two areas that are difficult now. One is if patients are just below the threshold of this trial, do you treat them longer than a year? Because for the lower risk patients, our data are now for a year and we don't have anything else. And then for our patients who are higher risk, you know, do we treat them beyond 3 years? I think that we're getting into territory for GI cancer doctors we've never been in. Is this going to be an endocrine therapy-like situation where people need to be treated for 5 or 10 years to see actual cure? That may be true, and I think we need to sort of withhold judgment until we've seen studies with longer durations of therapy.
So, Axel, do we know what's actually happening either in clinical practice? I'm not even sure what's happening in this group in terms of sort of basic decision-making about adjuvant imatinib for GIST.
I mean, that's one of the issues that comes up routinely when we talk to each other in workrooms. We present each other cases, and the question of duration of adjuvant therapy in this situation is one of the critical questions that always get raised. And I want to come back to Emily's point, I mean, more philosophical point, but I think very well taken, is does imatinib ever cure tumors, or does it just suppress the recurrence or growth of tumors? And the shape of the curve, you know, in this Scandinavian trial actually suggests, you know, as soon as patients got off imatinib, there was a kind of a turning point in the relapse-free survival curve, suggesting that even those patients after 3 years still benefited in terms of, you know, delaying the time to tumor recurrence, which again highlights, number one, these patients still weren't cured. Number two, imatinib, even after 3 years, still appeared to have some benefit. Now, no one knows whether it's better to kind of continue treatment beyond 3 years or wait for the recurrence and then initiate therapy, and whether this would generate the same overall survival benefit. And I think this is a very important question for in terms of, you know, how we approach adjuvant therapy. Bottom line, the way we decide for patients is if a patient after 3 years is tolerating the treatments very well, has no side effects, we would probably offer to continue imatinib even beyond 3 years.